What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, a more pitching podcast from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today we're going to talk about the Philadelphia Phillies. And there really isn't as much as I thought that we'd be able to talk about. Christopher Sanchez, of course, exists. And yes, he'll be inside of my top 10 after lots of thought and process. At the end of the day with Christopher Sanchez, we had this big jump in strikeout rate from 20% or so to 26% plus. Went a full season, had this really effective whip and ERA as a result. And really the question is, okay, how many strikeouts is he going to get again? Because with the increase of strikeouts, that means you have fewer hits allowed and fewer walks allowed, right? The batters you face are having a 0% chance of getting a hit. The more balls in play, the more opportunity for hits with the same BABIP, right? So I don't think it's going to be as good. And I hate to do this. I really do. I always hate this. Kind of seems like it's a lazy thing. In between the two. Because what happened is Christopher Sanchez did two things. I actually want to say three things. One thing on each of his three pitches to make it a better pitch. The thing is, though, I don't expect it to be as successful across the board. So against lefties, sliders were way, way, way better. He was able to take this pitch that he couldn't quite polish and was a little chaotic for location. Instead, had it a much tighter location down and away to left-handed batters. Way more successful for Christopher Sanchez. Much better. And easily took down lefties with a sinker and slider. Also, the changeup actually appeared in two strikes and was a very effective put-away pitch. The thing for the sinker was that it added not just a tick of velocity, but also 3 inches of drop. So it already was a sinker proper under 7 inches of vertical movement, which is what you want to see. That's what I really call a proper sinker is 6 inches roughly of vertical drop. Brought it down to 3. And that's really good. That means that you're going to get weaker contact and you are going to also get more foul balls on that too. As guys are going to dribble it behind you, it's going to essentially mean that you're not going to allow as many hits with it. And on top of that, it applied to the changeup as well, added even more drop. So the impact of that was a higher put-away rate on not just the changeup, but also the sinker as well to right-handers. And I don't know if it's a 28% put-away rate on the changeup. It was 19% in 2024. And honestly, if we saw that same thing again this past year, yeah, he'd be like a 21-22% strikeout rate because 111 of his strikeouts were off of that changeup to right-handers. That's how filthy this changeup is, Christopher Sanchez's. So that's the real question mark to me is, are you going to be able to strike out that many batters with that changeup to right-handers again? Probably not. And at the same time, I also recognize that you are a better pitcher than you were in 2024. You are going to go a ton into games. You're going to be efficient with it. You are going to be beneficial. And you should get a strikeout an inning. And that is great. That's great. I'm not too worried about the forearm scare. He said something felt weird and he continued to pitch. And he pitched the entire year. So not worried about that. Jesus Luzardo is someone who has been flying up draft boards. And I'm actually really surprised by it. Now, you can look at 2025 for Jesus Luzardo and say, look, he had these two games of 20 earned runs and otherwise was an absurd stud, right? He still, even with those two games, had a sub 4 ERA and about a 1.20-1.22 whip, had over 210 strikeouts. This is a stud, and I can't believe I'm getting him at ADP 22 or whatever it is for starting pitchers. The way I see it, is he still has a very susceptible four-seamer against right-handers. It is a big problem for him. Everything else has improved, though. And he did one of the biggest changes that I've been screaming about, which is a sinker, not a four-seamer, to left-handers. He gets a lot of natural horizontal break. Why are you throwing four-seamers away to lefties and not using a sinker instead? And all of a sudden, he started to do that. Far more success with that. Also, this change I didn't expect was taking the slider and turning it into a sweeper, which then turned a 50 to 55% strike rate to lefties into 65, 70% strikes, which is amazing. So he took down lefties far more efficiently than before. Not to say he wasn't bad before, that he was bad at it before. He still got a lot of whiffs on the slider back in the day. The four-seamer was fine. But this is much better. Much more weak contact, much more strikeout ability, the whole thing. Much better against lefties. Still, the four-seamer is bad against righties. And the game is, all right, can we do better with the changeup and slider? And he did by not throwing the slider and changing it to a sweeper. Now, the sweeper does not have the same amount of whiffs that the slider does. And that shouldn't be a surprise as a lefty to a righty, where that sweeper is going to be more of a called strike pitch. It was about just 14% swing strikes as opposed to the 20% plus of the slider of old. But the problem with that slider is that it had a 40% ICR. It would make mistakes over the plate and would just get crushed when that would happen. It was part of the volatility. And the changeup is kind of the same way, too. It's still not the elite changeup of a swatch. It's not as consistent as you would think. And I would imagine that Jesus Lazardo would be like a 35% to 40% even changeup guy, because you don't want to throw this four-seamer against a righties more than 40% of the time. I cannot express that enough. This is his weakest asset. It is dead zone movement at 96, but it's also under 6 feet of extension, which essentially means that's like 94 and dead zone movement. Now you understand. So when he's not locating this perfectly upstairs or inside to right-handers, Jesus Lazardo's four-seamer does get hit, and that is the biggest cause of his volatility. So I don't actually see too much of Luzardo repeating everything from last year. I think that the faults against right-handers are still there. And even though he's had these two games of 20 earned runs, it is a representation of Luzardo, though. He had an unbelievable first 2 months, had this problem, and he actually still had some other bad starts, so like four other bad starts in that second half after. But I think that volatility is still present. So I see like a 3.6 ERA guy here still. I still see like a 1.15 whip, 1.17 whip. But I do see lots of strikeouts. Now, the other aspect that I think is getting overlooked is that Luzardo has a massive injury history. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. He's had two seasons where it hasn't affected him, 23 and 25. But every other season, 100 innings or so, cut in half or not even. I mean, it's just constantly been there. And I don't think there... I'm kind of the guy who says, okay, cool, you just had a limited season. Now you'll have more. And then when you have the full season, now you have a higher chance of having less. That's how I see it. And that makes me feel like Luzardo is a cherry bomb on two aspects. Of one is a natural volatility and the volume. So I'm on the lower end. I still feel like he should help you in your 12-teamers, but there is a possibility that he gets more of this volatility and less of the studliness that we saw in the first 2 months. So I just want to put that out there. Left-handed approach is great. Right-handed approach is still very volatile. You have Aaron Nola, speaking of every other year. And it is really funny for me to say, oh, it's even your Nola and call it a day. It just kind of happens like that. And no, Aaron Nola is not as good as he used to be. What made him so good back in the day was a few factors, but one, it was sinker command. He was so good at going inside, outside, and avoiding the middle of the plate with his sinker. Also had a better changeup, and threw a little bit harder. Now, last year was rough. He sprained his ankle. He was also not doing well beforehand, but then really hurt himself, had a 9-earned run game, fine. Came back from the IL after also, fracturing his rib cage during rehab, my gosh. And then he also came back and had some rough starts, and it just looked bad, like a lost season. However, the very last game of the year was great. That was prime Aaron Nola. And I'm going to say this, Aaron Nola is just pretty much getting forgotten about almost, or not touched. When you're in your drafts and you're past that point of like the four to maybe even five guys that you like love, well, when you're searching for upside, as I've said this all offseason, apologize, sometimes I can't get out sentences as I want. I've talked about how Upside can be found in multiple forms, and the one that I need to be focusing on more is opportunity. That is, guys who can go six innings constantly and have a chance to be locked through the entire year so that they can accumulate 180 innings of quality ratios and a strikeout an inning. And Aaron Nola is the SP3 at worst, SP2 out of the gate, so he's going opening weekend. And you might just have good Aaron Nola from the start and you go. And I want that. Yeah, he probably is going to have some moments that aren't fun. He probably will be like, well, today wasn't Aaron Nola's day. Okay. It's not likely that he'll be like a 2.7 ERA, 1.05 whip or whatever. However, this could very easily be a guy you don't drop the entire year and you're happy as a Holly. And I think where he's going at the moment, I haven't checked for a bit, but I'm assuming I can get him as an SP6 or 7 at this point. Around like pick 200 or something? Yeah. I would do that all day because I don't think that last year was like, oh no, his skills that he's done for ages are just so much worse now and he can't replicate it again. That's not the case with Aaron Nola. Zach Wheeler is also someone I can say like, yeah, he's great. And I'll tell you more about Zach Wheeler, but really the other options, because those are only three starters. Zach Wheeler's not going to start the year in the rotation, so what is 4 and 5 and what is the depth for the Phillies? We'll talk about that and more after this break. So Zach Wheeler, this is so strange because he has thoracic outlet syndrome, but is going to be returning from it far faster than expected. And we should be expecting him around like June or July is really what I think. There's been a lot of like, oh, he's here, he's there, he's here, he's there. I'm going to say June 1st. I'm just going to put that out there, okay? And with Zach Wheeler, considering that he pitched through the year for the most part last year, and then he's on the IL and he's delayed, it's not like it's Tommy John he's returning from. I don't think that he's going to be that different when he returns. It's possible he is. It's possible that this surgery and, you know, its effects are debilitating in a way, and it makes it so you just can't really return. But from my recollection, and please, please correct me if I'm wrong here, those who have, you know, we talk about TOS, thoracic outlet syndrome, being like a death sentence for pitchers often. We know the Merrill Kelly exception, fine. What I'm getting at is generally you see the signs of them not being effective before they get diagnosed with it. And that's the reason for it, and they really can't come back. That's not the case with Zach Wheeler. So I feel like we just would get good Zach Wheeler. I don't know. I think I'm going to be drafting him where I recommend drafting all injury stashes, which is around SP 50, SP 55, because you have your four starters that you like. Now's the time to invest in other things and hope that you get great value for 4 months or whatever it is. So it really depends on where you are in your drafts and all, but if you have like three high L spots, yeah, Zach Wheeler, Garrett Cole, those are my top two IL stashes. And then Carlos Rodon underneath that. But yeah, Zach Wheeler, you don't have to overspend. I wouldn't say that. I would not be in a situation where I would turn down someone that's like a Framber Valdez, you know, instead of this. But yeah, Zach Wheeler should be really effective for you when he returns. The SP4 right now, though, is Taiwan Walker. No. Oh gosh, again, we're doing this. How are the Phillies still in this situation? Taiwan Walker reinvented himself a little bit where he decided finally I'm just going to throw cutters like 30-40% of the time to both lefties and righties. Nice, cool, awesome, thumbs up. You still have a splitter that is a strike 50-55% of the time that is not amazing. And your fastballs are very hittable and your slider isn't good and that's it. That's Taiwan Walker. So yes, there are games that he could go like two strikeouts and one earned run or something. We saw some stretches of that. We saw like a couple games at the beginning of the year. We saw like a different little stretch of it. No. He's not going to be better. And I just can't imagine that the Phillies are happy with this. I don't know why Lucas Giolito or Zach Gallen haven't signed with the Phillies as of me recording this. And it's just, I don't understand. I don't understand. Oh, wait, hold on. There's another spot open. And that's apparently going to be Andrew Painter. I've had a weird relationship with this because Andrew Painter to me is someone like back in 2022, I was not really in on the prospect game as much, right? I knew of the name, but like I wasn't doing my due diligence in the offseason like I do now. And so he got Tommy John and he's missed all this time. Or maybe there was another injury. I can't remember what it was, but he's missed time. And the thing is, at the end of the 2022 season, he had so much hype because he was having this 39% strikeout rate across single A and double A, about 122 innings of it, and a 6% walk rate. And then he missed all this time. And then here he comes in 2025. And I remember seeing him actually in the AFL in 2024 and seeing the data and being like, this isn't great. Now, this is someone who's missed so much time. And I can understand that, you know, he's getting back into it, but extension isn't good. Like the four seamer doesn't look like it's the main asset. So is it really the secondaries are just that good? I talked to James Anderson about it. He said, well, yeah, there were secondaries, the curveball, the cutter, the slider. Those were just such great pitches. He had such good control and feel for them. And like the fastball at like 95, 96 with good command, like that's what made him work. I'm like, okay, cool. I appreciate you a lot, James. And last year, like the first 2 months, Andrew Painter wasn't peak Andrew Painter, but he was good. It was like a 2.6 ERA with a 1.20 whip in seven starts between April and May. And then like a strikeout inning of 30 strikeouts in what, 24 innings or so. And then he just fell off for like the next 4 months. He pitched throughout AAA last year. Like he really was tweaking as much as he could his arsenal, his secondaries, the slider and the curveball and the changeup. And he's just trying to figure it out. The cutter at its peak was like 90 miles per hour with good movement and good location. And I saw that in the first 2 months. The curveball too, I think, was really good then. Like with two-plane movement at 83, 84. And it looks like there's a sweeper getting added now. What I'm trying to say is Andrew Painter was bad for the entire year. Like the entire year mark was a 5.4 ERA with a 1.55 whip. Like, no, you can't, you're not the guy if that's what you're going to do, right? K inning, sure. Strike inning, fine. But his vert on his four-seamer came down from 17 inches to 15.5 in those 4 months. He's not ready. And unless Andrew Painter shows up in the spring and is like, look, I've got my four-seamer. I've got my three secondaries, a slider slash sweeper, whichever one you want it to be, two-plane curve, and this really nice stabilizing cutter. There's also this changeup that I've been working on that's now kick change, and it was a bit last year by the end as he tweaked with that one too. And like, I've got it all working. Sweet. Go for it, go. But I'm not going to assume that. And I think the higher probability is that Andrew Painter still isn't ready and they leave him in the minors just to figure it out for like a month at least. So then who is the fifth starter, right? Well, they have Bryce Wilson and Tucker Davidson. No, you can't. I Phillies, are you really going to start the year with Bryce Wilson and Tucker Davidson as your SP5? When, again, Zach Wheeler and Lucas Giolito are just out there. There is Alan Rangel. And I don't know if that's how you pronounce his name, but he showed up for 5 games last year. One was a bulk relief appearance. Otherwise, it's just normal relief. And he actually might be the SP5 out of camp. He is a 72-degree arm angle guy where it's obviously a little bit of cut, but 72-degree arm angle is the most over-the-top I have seen. Jonah Tong is 64 degrees. This is 72, okay? He throws a 92, 93 with it. Yes, it's 19 inches of vert, but you should know better now. With that super high arm angle, that's expected, right? That's like expected movement on it. Slider is there at 85. You have a massive 20 vert curveball, negative 20, that he actually threw for strikes all throughout the minors last year. Like a 61% expected zone rate, according to PLV, which is unreal for a huge curve like that. And PLV loved the curve, loved the slider, loved the fastball, and loves the changeup. And the changeup is this over 10 mile per hour slower changeup, and it's his best pitch by far. So here he is, massively over the top. Guys can't tell if this is a changeup or the four-seamer. Has this huge curve to get strikes and a slider as well. Like, okay. It's not the elite guy. It's not the one that I would say, hey, cool, 12-teamers, this is the guy to look out for. But I would say your NL-only leagues, like, this is your ultra sleeper. Like, no one is going to be thinking about this guy. And I think in spring, we're going to see how the Phillies feel about him. There's really, like, nothing else that is ready to go. Bryce Wilson, I guess, and Tucker Davidson, but geez. Other options, Gene Cabrera. It's possible that he can be an option as well. He throws strikes. He has a good feel for his slider and his changeup, but it's just not a good fastball, and it's just like, meh. He hasn't even pitched in AAA yet. He's just been pitching in AA. Yaniel Curé was acquired from the Rays, and he was such an elite prospect. I was so excited about him because in 23 and 24, he was insane. 300 strikeouts combined in those two seasons. And then he, had a shoulder injury to start 2025, comes back for the Rays, and is just not even close to what he was. He can't get his controls, velocity's off, and that's that. And they DFA him. Like, they just released him. So the Phillies are like, all right, sure, we'll take a chance. We'll see if he's better with his shoulder surgery, and everything is, you know, he's healed, essentially, from there. I hope so. Moises Chassé also exists, and there's a guy that I was so hyped for this time last year. I was saying, like, look, I think that Painter won't be ready, and Chassé is the one to care about. And Eric Loggenhagen actually was like, yeah, he was dope. And then all of a sudden, his control was worse, and his fastball velocity declined, just like Curé. And all of a sudden, he got Tommy John. Not fun. Chassé is a dude, though. And I think when he does return, yeah, it'll be like 2027 because he's going to miss all of this year, too, probably. And if he doesn't, then he got Tommy John in May. So he'll pitch in the minors at the end of the year. Maybe he's ready to go in 2027 by like June or something like that. Someone to pay attention to. And there's also Gage Wood. Now, I need to mention with Gage Wood that he threw a 19 strikeout no-hitter in the College World Series last year and was drafted in the first round by the Phillies. So whenever you see guys quickly make the jump from draft to majors, it's because they threw in college. He's already 22. He's clearly like a pitcher. You know, he just had success, of course, in the College World Series and all. It's possible that Gage Wood just does so well, and they're like, we need somebody. We don't want to go to Gene Cabrera and Allen and Painter. Like, it's you. Not out of the question to see a massively fast promotion here. Thing is, though, he is two pitch. It's fastballs and curveballs. Curveball is a really good tight one. There is a fastball that is really dominant. It's kind of like Ben Brown with a better heater, but maybe slightly worse curveball. And he has been experimenting with like a slider cutter. So hopefully Gage Wood throws more of that number three pitch, has that as a stable one, and then can become that really polished pitcher. We'll see. I don't have any data because he did not pitch at all in professional ball. I mean, say for like one game. Like one game, he had like four strikeouts or something in his debut. That's it, but I don't have any data for that. All right, that is the Phillies. And I really wish there was an update that I can give at some point because they need to acquire something. They have to, right? I mean, especially if there's any injury in here. Like, what? Oh, my gosh. It is fascinating to see that this is the state that they're in. And good luck to them. I mean, truly, there. You could even say, like, well, Nick, wasn't there, like, a Rule 5 draft pick? This guy, Zach McCambly, yeah, he looks like he's going to be a reliever for them. So I don't even want to say that. It's really just, no. There's just nothing to tell you about. Alex McFarlane, no. I think he's also kind of, like, reliever-ish and everything. I removed him from this list. It's just not good. You know? So yeah, good luck, Phillies fans. That is it for today. Keep an eye out for the new live draft assistant that's coming out next week on Tuesday. It is an update to the product we had before, but it's a live app where our pitcher list rankings, my SP rankings, will be built in as a cheat sheet. inside of it, on top of our projections and ADP. It is so cool. It's your cheat sheet, your draft guide for the year. So we're really excited about that. We also have a PDF draft guide we're putting out for PL Plus and PL Pro members next week. That is our outline of how to draft your hitters and your starters and your closers, with a mock draft inside of it, and our cheat sheet, of course, of all of our rankings and projections. So look out for that, but that is it. So my name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIPs be low, and your strikeouts high.